There have been a number of special times that I consider to be my favorite video game moments, and they all have something in common. They're all based around me engaging in an emotion that I would not have expected to come out of that game. Often it's something as simple as laughing out loud, or becoming enraged, or making somebody else enraged, or making others react. But one of those moments came, of all places, during Grand Theft Auto V, the game where you ride around as one of three different characters and beat people up, steal cars, and cause all kinds of mayhem. But it wasn't some sort of car jump or blowing up a plane or crashing into something that got that emotion out of me. It was doing one of the many fetch quests the game makes you do, where you drive to one part of the city and then drive back. It's constantly trying to put up realistic night and day and weather throughout the game's time. As luck would have it, I was driving along the coast of this city, heading back to my home base. And it had turned into late evening, something like 10 or 11 p.m. at night, and I was driving into the city along the ocean, and across from me, through the bay, the lights of a pier with a Ferris wheel. And there were cars coming back and forth throughout the city, and you could see them, fuzzy, hazy, but moving. And for a moment, just for a moment, I could feel a pull to a dream I had as a child, and a feeling of a place I had always wanted to be. And that was the last thing I expected I was going to feel. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to William Hearn, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The feeling that Grand Theft Auto V was giving me was a feeling of a melancholy wish. If you've not played Grand Theft Auto V, it's a little hard to explain what it all looks like. This is a game series that has been going on for a while, and when the game started out, it was a top-down, straightforward driving and shooting game created by the same video game studio, DMA Design, that made Lemmings, among other classics. And these guys were just putting together another violent shooter game. But something weird happened. They kept releasing new versions, and each of these versions became more and more ambitious. They switched from a top-down mode to a 3D game, and while the general gameplay didn't modify all that much, you were essentially a sociopathic criminal of some sort, moving from place to place and stealing cars and beating up people and getting money and fame, depending on how you played it, the game itself became more and more weirdly realistic. Not necessarily realistic by becoming a movie or a photograph, but moving into its computer graphics, uncanny valley feel, and giving you, I would say, an analog for a sort of real world. Over time, they made the world of Grand Theft Auto more alive. In a lot of video games, everything is focused towards you. You are a ship, and you are in space, and everything in space is either trying to ram into you or shoot you to death. It's a case where you are the most important thing in the world, the most important concept, the key to everything. You are not just a protagonist, you are the only protagonist this world understands. And Grand Theft Auto started to move in a direction that life was going on around you. People were walking from place to place, having conversations, being picked up by cars, buying things, running, getting into fights, mugging each other, living, to some extent, some sort of lives, which you could choose to interrupt or choose to make miserable. But it wasn't reliant on you keeping track of everything. If you got into one of your cars and you happened to drive slowly, you would hear snippets of conversations going on, ones that didn't mention you or have any real plot meaning, but just people living lives. And in a similar way, the sky would slowly change. It would get clouds. It might rain. It would become dark. Lights would come on. The city would change its look to reflect what weather or time of day. And in fact, the moon moved according to realistic phases, and the lights coming off of the moon and the sun would reflect accurately on the cars. There were lots of weird little details that they added. If your character walked into the water and came back after only going up to his knees, his legs would be wet and they would slowly dry. The argument about how important or not important this was is something I want to set aside. It was that they had the money at Rockstar Games to pay enormous fleets of people, hundreds, perhaps over 1,000 people, to make something that felt, in its own way, alive. Such that it was that the world of Grand Theft Auto started to have all sorts of way over-engineered aspects of lighting and movement. During a technical speech given by one of the designers of the Grand Theft Auto engine, he mentioned that if you saw some pixel representing a street light or a store, and you drove in that direction, and you kept your eye on that pixel, it would become an actual light source somewhere inside of the game. There was, in other words, a disproportionate dedication to what some might call realism. Such it was, then, that I was driving on this highway at night in Grand Theft Auto, having done dozens and dozens of missions and dealt with all sorts of problems, but yet was finding myself staring out over this bay. In their quest to make some sort of realistic world, at least as far as lights and vehicles went, the creators of Grand Theft Auto V had given back to me a memory. I didn't learn to drive until I was 27, so I spent a lot of time, way more time than a person should, in the back of cars, looking out over darkness, looking out over landscapes. When you're driving, you do have to keep your eye on the road, and you can let your gaze drift a little bit, but not that much, because you will be risking yourself. But if you're always in the back of a car, life becomes a bit of a diorama for you. You observe things. You see how buildings are put together. You see how people walk. You see what stores are offering and what the names of things are. And you read a lot of signs. And if you're a kid who's always riding around in the back of cars, you wish for things, but you often don't have the ability to act on it. I've said before that one of the reasons kids will get into hacking is because it'll probably be the first time in their lives they have that amount of control. You spend a lot of your time as a kid, after all, being told where to go, what to do, what classes you have to take, where the family is going to travel. You spend a lot of time in the back of cars being driven to a place you may or may not want to go. And from a very young age, I fell in love with arcades and entertainment centers and piers and tourist traps, because those were very, very interesting. And very often, they weren't places that we were going. We might be driving for a few hours from one town to another for some sort of family event, or because my father or mother had somewhere we were supposed to be visiting, and I would look out the window and see something, and it was designed, of course, to be interesting, whether it was a large bright sign or bright flashing lights or some big statue that was meant to make a person want to look closer. And I would ask my parents if I could go there, and usually we couldn't. I mean, sometimes, of course, we were able to go, which told me it was worth my time. I would go there and all of the dumb postcards and decorations and machines to put money into were worth all of the trouble of waiting for them. But often we didn't have the opportunity. They became things that I wished for, and I was sad I wasn't going to see, and I would put in my mind the hope that I would remember to come back when I was older and I had the power to visit them. Naturally, a lot of these places both faded from memory or became themselves obsolete, things that disappeared, places that were never going to be again. Something that was stunning to look at when I was 9 was now a hollow shell when I returned at 25. And so it was in this video game that I was playing in my 40s that I would look out over blurring lights moving around near a huge, distant Ferris wheel, and I would feel that same pull, that same sadness that I was probably not going to get there in time, that the lights were going to go out, or we would turn and I wouldn't see it anymore, that it would disappear behind trees and I wouldn't ever be able to visit again. It would be gone. The fact that things had gotten to that point, that I would feel that real human emotion reaching through decades of my life, has given me two things to think about. The first thing is the worth and value of telling these stories and helping me pull up again things that I've buried or forgotten about, and valid wishes and dreams that I had that I forgot that I had, and using my adulthood to either achieve those wishes, if they still have any weight, or find a way to make them live in others, to find out the story, to research why something was and why it's gone. Because even though the dreams of a child are often a small thing, they are a true thing, and I would like some more of that truth in my life. The second idea that I've had is how I'm very excited to where game engines are going to go, and especially what these engines are going to do as they fall into more and more hands. You see, it's very obvious to me that the future is in creating very complicated, yet also very easy to interface with, game engines. These other engines being created by all sorts of firms and then licensed out means that people can focus on their visions and creating worlds that otherwise would never live outside of their minds. I have to hope, I need to hope, that the different engine companies, as they license out these incredible pieces of technology, the ability to create a vision that will be shared, and that as time goes on, these engines will find other meaning, pulling in data from the world or from algorithms, visions of dreams and ideas that otherwise would just fade into obscurity or just be the lost wishes of a young child. I have faith that this is the future. This is what we're going to see. And I am so excited in the years to come, these hazy visions across lakes of darkness are going to be told. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, Forrest Fuqua, Scott McCrady, Scott Roseanne, and Simon Morgan, along with the hundreds of other people on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.